Welcome to the Move Rural Canada podcast, where every week we showcase incredible businesses in rural and northern Canada. Businesses that are not only growing, but are looking to hire.
We're here to show you companies and communities outside of the big cities that are building stronger and more inclusive workplaces. Workplaces that want and are encouraging newcomers, immigrants, and refugees to work with them.
Let us be your guides to help you find the best places in Canada to not only immigrate, but build a career and settle.
I'm your host, Leah Mitchell.
And I am your co-host, Lindsay Rubernick.
Join us as we learn about all of the amazing career opportunities in places that you may not have ever thought of moving.
Let's get started.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Move Rural Canada podcast. We have an exciting episode today. Today we have on Kathy Sweet. She is the director of HR in North America for Vaderstad, which is located in Southern Saskatchewan. Welcome, Kathy.
Thank you so much for having me. It was an absolute pleasure.
Yes, I'm very excited because I have a lot of family that live in Saskatchewan. So we drive very near, you know, near to where your company is located. I know there's lots of great things about the area, you know, the company. So I would love for you to tell us, about the company and everything around.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you. It is really a family run. It's been family run since the beginning, even before Vaderstad purchased the entity in Canada. It was built by a family as well. So family is very much a part of who we are as a company. It is the Canadian operations. The manufacturing facility is in rural Saskatchewan. It is in near Lang Bank, Saskatchewan. It is about 20 minutes south of the number one highway. But it really draws in from a radius of as far as Grenfell, Mooseman, as well as further south as Carlisle and Arcola. So it is a very nice little population pull. And it is on the secondary highway, just on Highway 9 South.
How far would you say, just because actually we had the economic development officer of Mooseman, our last episode, how far would you say it's from Mooseman if someone wanted to like live in Mooseman and work at Vaderstad?
It's about 50 kilometers. Okay. There are some really good roads. You can either take the number one, which is obviously really nice, or there is a really great suit. We call them super grid roads, which is a nice little direct route there as well. So it takes about 35 minutes to drive to get to the site. So that's not bad at all.
I always tell people it's not any different than sitting in traffic for an hour, you know, but at least you're not getting angry because you can drive in a straight line and there's not cars.
You can. You just got to look out for the wildlife is what we say. So sometimes it's a little tricky when you have a hunting season in the fall, as an example. But a large population of our community, the people that come from our communities are obviously Whitewood, Kipling, Kennedy. That's on that Highway 48. So it's literally 8 to 16 minutes on the highway to get to our facility. So we do see a lot of that. But then we also encourage carpooling and things like that. So because there is over 200 people that come to the factory every day, you know, to help with roads and things like that, we absolutely encourage those.
So Kathy, what is it exactly that Vaderstad does, like, and the positions when people travel to the factory, what's all involved in the positions there?
Vaderstad in the Lang Bank facility has everything, right? It is a full manufacturing facility and it's the original in Canada. We do have a supplementary head office, I would say, that's in Regina for some professionals that don't necessarily need to be on site all the time as we expand. But at the factory itself, it has got everything from fabrication, assembly technicians, accountants, HR, finance, IT, manufacturing engineering, design engineering, innovation engineering. So it does have on the site, it's really grown. It's got multiple offices, I would say. One is relatively new, only a few years old, that we have for our, we call them product and development. So those are the engineers designing, innovating new product, new ideas. And again, it's right from raw steel, right to finished product that rolls off the factory line. So, and it's air seeders. So it's the farm equipment that everybody sees, the great big red ones. So Saskatchewan has massive farms, even in Alberta, which is, you know, a very large market for us. Everyone can see how big those farms are. So you can absolutely have an 84-foot toolbar with a 1300 or more tank on the back of it. And you see them drive because they can only drive 40 kilometers an hour down the highway. So it is very much a right from raw steel to finished product, innovation and everything included. So the Regina office really helps us attract some talents that give some flexibility into our working professionals.
So is there any occupations that you need right now, or you find that's more prevalent than others?
Right now, I think, you know, when you build a sense of community in the hourly workforce, so they, you know, we have a very large Filipino population as well as Ukrainian population in our hourly workforce in the factory. And there's very much a sense of community there. They have lunches lots together, they picnic together, they go to church together, things like that. So that is really positive for us because it is very much word of mouth now in our hourly workforce. Okay. When I started 6.5 years ago, I think maybe 20 people applied to Vaterstad. There was not much of a reputation out there at all. But we've really done a lot of work on employer branding and attraction and recruitment and really partnering with organizations such as SINP, Open Door Society in Regina, things like that. The ones that we have a very hard time at the factory is really those professionals. And so Vaterstad is one of those organizations, as we'll say, just an engineer. Manufacturing engineers, they have to be at the manufacturing site. If you're a quality engineer, you've got to be at the site. Mm-hmm. If you're a design engineer, we want you to be right attached to the test shop, trying out new things. It's not one of those organizations where you go design something in a cubicle on the 20th floor of a building in downtown Vancouver, Toronto, and you never get to see and touch it. We encourage people to go design it, work collaboratively, and then go see and touch it as you're doing it. So that is really where we find the hardest pieces. Young engineers and young professionals are super excited, as we all know, ready to travel and go do whatever they need to. But when it comes to really keeping them there for that, you know, that career progression and showing that there's opportunity laterally in our organization as well, not just everything vertical, that's really where it's tough, because you'll commute for a few years, but after that you really want to find your steady. So
yes, I think that can be the challenge. You know, a lot of people are more and more, I think, moving rural or north to sort of get their career started, but it's how mm-hmm. do you keep them after those 3 years, you know, so that they go into those higher positions and stay.
Yeah, absolutely. And we do, you know, all the traditional things, such as, you know, we do an onboarding that incorporates you into the family. You know, we really try to associate as being like a sports team. A sports team challenges each other. We all respect each other's strengths. You know, we do those things. Family, you kind of give excuses every once in a while, you know. but it's really, it comes down to how can we do the exit interviews. We do an analysis every quarter. How are we doing? I mean, I love that the young people are brutally honest, which is fantastic. We've had some really spicy answers, you know, with relation to finding a significant other is a challenge in a rural community. So that's totally fair. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, something out of our control as an employer, but investing in the communities, getting people there, participating and representing themselves and who we are has really been part of our success anyway.
Mm-hmm. So Kathy, so just taking off from that, what would be one or two suggestions you would give a listener right now if they are interested in your company in terms of trying to get to know your company better and if it's a right fit for them?
Yeah, I mean, I would really recommend following our social media platforms, because that really tells you more than just what the website's going to. It shows you how passionate our farmers are, the ones that purchase our equipment, how they're invested in us. And take a look at local communities as well that are within the that are associated with this organization. So WMWDA is such an ambassador. I mean, we partnered with them to when the war broke out, you know, Ukrainians coming, they're a very great skill set. You know, taking a look at our social media and seeing testimonials and what we've done, whether it be LinkedIn, whether it be Instagram. We just launched TikTok, which, you know, is always controversial. Yeah, it's really great, especially for a European company, because TikTok is not a thing in Europe. So, I mean, the website is a traditional thing, but I mean, there's stories to be had. So that's much better to watch those stories on those.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think too, just, you mentioned a lot of great towns, which I'm going to everyone put in the show notes, because I think that's a great opportunity to look at all those different towns and explore and see what they have. And you know, I always tell people, look at the house prices. You're going to be pleasantly surprised, you know?
Yes, exactly.
You know, there's great opportunity. You know, it's an opportunity where you can come and work for a great company and buy a house. You know, we can't do that in Toronto. You can't do that in Vancouver, you know, as a 25-year-old, you know, like there's just amazing opportunities in the rural areas to do that.
Yeah. And it's truly, I think a lot of people, I mean, outside of maybe the factory floor, but the professionals really understand it's a global company. They are interacting on Teams calls. You know, COVID really forced us all into the online platform. And so Vattersat as a company has really embraced that. I mean, there are days where, you know, your headphones aren't out because you're collaborating with someone in a different country, with a different perspective, with a different background. And I think that for the professionals, they really do see that. So creating that diversity and collaboration. So a factory, as an example, a couple of weeks ago, we wrapped up our sales and service, right? The season over, set air cedar planting season is done. We brought the professionals that were right in front of all the farmers all year long, talking to the people on the factory floor, engaging with them, giving them the feedback of what they do every day, how the farmer is taking that, celebrating it, asking for something a little bit different. And it was something that absolutely we want to continue having. So there's not just this isolation of, oh, you only do this, you only do that, and you can only do this. It is really meant to be as much cross-functional as we possibly can make it.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. So you talk a lot of, about that cross-functional collaboration. So how does it, how do you find that challenge? Because being a rural area, you know, I'm assuming there's probably not a lot of like language supports, right, for some time. So do you have certain levels of expectation for language, or how do you, I guess, meet that challenge?
Yeah, language is one that we had to get really creative on, to be honest, a few years ago. So we actually partnered with someone in, I do believe, the first one was in Kipling, and we would actually do English classes at night and she would do them in her house. And we really streamed from there. Very, very lovely. I mean, some of the ladies that I have the privilege of working with, they have really gone creative. They've really talked to them as well and said, what do you need? There is obviously, when you talk about a manufacturing facility, there is an expectation. Obviously, safety is our number one priority. And so you've got to be able to understand different safety mechanisms, communications that are in place. Now, the other one was Ukrainians, was also a challenge. So we actually did have a gentleman, or do have a gentleman, that's on the shop floor who is Ukrainian. So he was able to really help. We extended what we would call like a mentorship program or a buddy program that would allow him to come in and support and so on. And then we support them in their paperwork. We support them in their language classes. We give them time and space to do that as well. So there are lots of, there are some supervisors on the floor that are fluent in the different languages as well. So we'd really try to do that bridging. But I mean, I know a lot of organizations that are large are like, oh, safety, you know, you've got to have a certain, you know, C-level English to be able to operate. And I think, yes, there are certain points with that. But I think there's at certain points where we can, you can get creative within your organization to make them feel included, but at the same time, make sure you're communicating with them as clearly as possible.
Oh, 100%. And I think that's what's very different about being in rural is you don't have maybe always as larger a group to pull from. You can say, oh, this is our level, but they maybe have 5,000 applicants, whereas you might have 200, right? There's a big difference there. And you have to get creative. And you have, like you said, you have to sort of offer those classes or get them set up with supports or give them, like you said, flexibility with their work so that they can do that, right? Because I always say it can be a challenge if you're working full time and you go home with, you know, when you have family, it can be hard to make English a priority. So it's great to hear like of a workplace that's giving that flexibility to encourage it, because then those could be your managers in 2 or 3 years, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And like I said, I mean, for us, I mean, yes, there are challenges. Am I going to say it's easy? Absolutely not. I mean, do our supervisors get frustrated? Absolutely. I mean, that's just the way it is. But they have seen in the 6 years that, you know, that I've been there and that we've really changed the organization to look what it looks like today. There is such a large added value to the way that you're bringing someone, how they're thinking about things, what they've done previously, right or wrong, teaching them, they're teaching us about what they've come from and we're teaching them about where they are. And it doesn't come without its struggles, but it's been insanely successful for us in the last several years, for sure.
And I think a lot of companies don't realize how much offering that language is a retention strategy. I just finished working with a company over the last 3 years going in and doing English, and we were looking at the stats. All the people that started 3 years ago are still there. So I'm like, you just had 100% retention because you're offering English. And I'm sure there's other factors as well. But you know, people are buying houses and staying because they're not having to go and find classes somewhere else. And I think that's where a lot of companies miss. They're like, oh, figure it out yourself. No, if the company helps them figure it out, people will stay.
Yeah. And I mean, we've really grown in the factory to almost over 34% diversity within there. And that's including, you know, professionals and hourly folks. So it really does lead to, you know, the sense of community that they have as well. I mean, they're so happy. I mean, maybe it's just because maybe the director of HR is waving at them. I don't really know, but you know, they're all just like, hi, it's so nice to see you. And very respectful. Even our cafeteria on site will do like a lunch or something to showcase their nationality. There's some backgrounds that can't eat meat, so there's certain things that they have as supplementary. And so our cafeteria even meets that requirement. So, I mean, those are the types of things, right? It's just not one thing. It's different aspects of each, right? So,
yeah, 100%.
Speaking on how to retain your employees, especially if they're newcomers, do you guys assist with any immigration pathways? Do you facilitate any of that for them? And if so, can you give us a couple examples?
Yeah, I mean, the two ladies that I have the privilege of that are working in my area, they have really developed a wonderful program for people. I mean, there was definitely times where we scraped our knees because we trusted some external support from, you know, as an example, their legal guidance, which we ended up finding out that that was not the correct path. We need to have our own in-house expertise. So we've had these ladies, they're trained up. They have communicated to the new people that are starting that this is the expectation of the organization. You have 1 year. We will support you in this. This is what your start. This is when we will communicate with you. This is what the expectation of you is. And then they will do on full letters of support. And then again, we have our own legal. So we have a very trusted provider, consultant that we use to assist them with their paperwork to make sure that we don't have the problem we had several years ago of trusting others. Cause it really came down to it when he learned that I know it wasn't their fault and it definitely wasn't ours, but it still felt bad. Mm-hmm. And we didn't want to put that kind of hope and loss of hope in someone that we weren't comfortable with. So, you know, there's things such as helping them with, we give them relocation allowance when they come, right? So there is an immigrant, like I would say immigrant, we have different levels of relocation packages, obviously, but we allow them that support. And then we help them find, you know, connected into the right communities and things like that. We onboard everybody, you know, at the same time. So it's not like just random. It's not like one here, one there. You start with a group of people. So you start already with a getting to know other people that are new into the organization as well. So there are, you know, we support them from the paperwork through the troubling times as well. I mean, there are some professionals that that are Filipino that they're like, I just need to talk to someone in my native language. And, you know, we're like, we get it. You know, so because we are a Swedish owned company. So we absolutely understand that English isn't everybody's first language. And sometimes some things just don't translate.
Yeah.
Definitely understandable. So we do see a very large retention when we support them through the entire process. But it didn't come without, you know, some unfortunate things in the very onset of it. But SINP and some of the other organizations have really supported us in it as well, and kind of told us what we're doing, how we're doing it. And obviously there's been some change in program as of recently, right? So there's been some nomination programs that have decreased for a certain amount of time and sheer panic ensued. So the nice thing is that I had my team connect indirectly. They got all the notes, we prepared everything, and then we sat down with everyone. So that was the nice part about it, is they felt comfortable that we weren't just casting aside. They absolutely knew that we stick to the process. We became educated in it, and then we continued on. So,
you know, I actually want to reiterate what you just said for all the listeners. And I know it's great when people, you know, have the option to select their own representation. However, the company does have it in your best interest. They do want to see you be successful in it. So I hold contracts with companies as well. And they do give the alternative to, you know, because we can't force them. But we do see a higher refusal rate than when you go internal. And just I think the listener or the newcomer has to be aware that the company is very, very much rooting for them. It's just not a one-off hit, and that you guys will, provide English and relocation. So you're invested in that employee. And I really think that's a great idea to have your own internal house or have somebody contracted out so they understand your company and what your needs are and what type of people you're looking for as well. So,
Just truthfully, the two of us sat down when that incident happened a couple of years ago and just felt dreadfully awful. Mm-hmm. And there was nothing that we could do to help them. It was just, some things happen. It really does. But that was definitely a lesson for us that we needed to step up our game to have some sort of, again, who understands our organization, what our needs are. But then also that interprets a better level of support for the employee as well. So,
And that's really great to hear about the relocation packages. So in theory, if someone was in a large, let's say Calgary or Toronto, they're very interested. There's opportunity to sort of help financially to get them there if that's sort of what's holding them back, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's just the beginning, right? I mean, there is things that we do to support them because we understand, just as an example, is if you have an ailing family member and they're back home. We do try to really work with our employees to understand that, if you have an ailing parent, you don't just go away for 2 days, right? It is a longer period of time. Or when you are going home to relocate your family to Canada, that does take some time. So the relocation, yes, that's in the onset, but there is things throughout their work life cycle with us that we really try to accommodate, such as going back home for either bereavement or marriage or something like that of significance. We really try to work with them. And it seems to go over really well. It's very different for a Canadian, right? We don't take a month to have three marriages or, three ceremonies to get married, right? So it was something that took some cultural training as well for our people leaders. Because how do you go without someone for a month in an organization that's actually, it's only about 300 people. So one person in a department might be pretty impactful for them for a month.
Well, it's pretty tricky too in terms of immigration, right? You got to make sure that you're watching the immigration requirements. So even though we've got to have a cultural awareness, we do got to follow federal policy and law as well. So that's kind of a tightrope to walk as well. So in terms of you speak a lot about having newcomers. So then I'm going to guess that your requirement for the Canadian experience is not high on your list as long as they have experience in that field you're looking for or.
Yeah. And I mean, honestly, it's transferable skills. I mean, the two ladies that I speak about in my organization, she ran her own privacy law firm in the Philippines for years, almost a decade, and came to me. And then she hadn't worked in Canada yet. And I saw some personality. I saw some traits. My team was absolutely blown away by her energy. And then another one comes from being a team lead as an auditor for a major auditing firm outside of Canada. And I'm going to tell you, they're the best darn payroll person you're ever going to meet. There's compliance there. So, I mean, now we've invested in her. So now she gets trained on what Canadian legislation and federal regulations are regarding Canadian payroll. So there is an immense amount. I mean, yes, we do partner with like University of Regina for their master's program as well. But then we do really take a look at. Sometimes it works really successfully. Like I just mentioned with my two, because I tell my team, I'm like, oh, I must be a really good judge then of what they do. But at the same time, sometimes it doesn't go well, right? Because sometimes we call it hoodwinked, that maybe it didn't transfer as much as we had thought it was. But overall, I would say our success rate is much higher than not. So it's worth taking a risk, but it really depends on, we've had risks with managers as well as individual contributors, so.
But you can risk hiring a Canadian still. It doesn't matter, right? It just someone, in the local town, you could think that they have the skills and it doesn't work out,
But yeah, I mean, even with the local communities, some of the communities have opened up additional daycares. There's some that have come to us and we entertain them and we talk about what's going on in their local areas, right? I mean, Kipling is a big draw for people because, again, it's highway. It's only like 15 minutes from the site. And they talk about what they're doing for their local. We sponsor like the Whitewood rodeos, you know, the curling bonds fields, things that are beautifully Canadian. Mm-hmm. And then we give tickets away. So then you have some of these newcomers going to the rodeo for the very first time. And they're like, what was that? Right? Those kinds of things. Like that's the fun stuff.
Well, and that's a huge piece, I think, to also retention, because it's getting them in the community. They're, you know, they're using English, they're talking, they're making friends, and that's how you keep people. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
So would you see, Kathy, that there's a requirement that you should, you know, try your best to get your driver's license if you're going to be employed by your company? What are your thoughts on that?
It's really tough. I mean, we've had some people that said, I'll get it, which, you know, we asked them kind of where they are in the process, because you all have to drive. Obviously, we really support people carpooling, without a doubt. But then when you're at the factory as well, depending on the role that you're in, if you're an hourly person, there's a likelihood that you're going to have to drive around throughout the site as well. And there's probably forklift, and there's other requirements of driving other than just getting to and from work. And then some of the professionals that we have, it's not just getting to site, right? I mean, you're going to go watch, see equipment running in the field. You're going to be cross-collaborating with people. Maybe it's even our suppliers across Western Canada. So as much as there is a hub that is there, you know, there's, yes, the work is there, but there's also so much more additional work that's not at the site that you do need to be able to get to. And again, we all know driving in rural Saskatchewan in the winter is pretty tricky as it is. And so it is really important for a sense of community for people to support each other in each of you driving or things like that. We've brainstormed ideas about doing other things, such as, you know, a shuttle bus or something like that. But then how do you draw that, right? And then the towns were like, well, what about mine? So the requirement for the driver's license, that is pretty big. But we do some, depending on the role, do give some flexibility on getting that within a time period of starting with us.
But I think that's a really great point though you bring up, because right there, you know, that it's, you know, beneficial for you as an employee to have your driver's license. And if you aren't really interested in getting your driver's license when you relocate to Canada, then maybe this job won't be for you.
No, right? Exactly. No,
so that's something you can tick off right there, right? And and then so it doesn't, you know, I don't want to say waste, but it doesn't take your time and resources up, as well as the newcomer that might be looking at reapplying. So if you aren't really interested in getting your driver's license, then probably working for your company isn't the right path to go.
No, rural Saskatchewan is based on being in a car.
Yeah.
You know, we all have, you know, if we've all had children, I mean, I grew up in rural Saskatchewan and it was like a 50 kilometer radius that I played sports. Now it's like a 400 kilometer radius on sports. So, and I mean, you're driving everywhere. And so it is very different. So if someone does truly want to have a long term with us, I mean, you're going to have to drive, right? Whether it's to the grocery store, not every town even has a big enough grocery store, right? So there's just rural Saskatchewan is based on getting around.
And I think that's honest. I mean, that's rural Manitoba too. That's most, I think, rural areas in northern areas.
Yeah, rural Canada is about driving.
Yeah.
You need to have a license. Like that's just, you know, and maybe I just said you can take a little bit of time to get it, but you can't settle and be part of the community without it.
No. And I mean, I will poke a funny story. So one of the ladies that works for me, she's the lady from the Philippines, who's a lawyer, and she grew up in a very privileged home in the Philippines. And I mean, I appreciate her energy, her thoughtfulness. So as her senior director, her and I were driving somewhere together. And so I was bringing her along, sharing with her, whether it be SINP or some sort of project that we're working on. So I went and picked her up because she wasn't comfortable driving. I picked her up and she got in the back seat of the car. Like I was her driver. And I was like, hello? No, you come sit up front with me. She's like, oh my gosh. It was just natural to me because she grew up with a driver, nannies, chefs, things like that. But she just, natural instinct, she just jumped in the back seat because the driver was there to pick her up and take her to her next meeting. So something as simple as that, it can be super fun to celebrate and laugh about. But sometimes those natural tendencies, they're just ingrained, right? I mean, something as simple as that. I mean, how you tie your shoes, how you say goodbye to your kids in the morning. I think, you know, it's I find it just insanely celebratory for us to be able to say what the funny things are that we come from.
So Kathy, before we started our recording, you had mentioned that you have lost some staff in terms of, you know, them relocating to larger urban centers. If you had the opportunity to go back and kind of, you know, work with the with that staff who had left, would you give them advice on what they could do to so they wouldn't feel so isolated? Like maybe they just didn't know or weren't aware of the opportunities within their community. What would you have said to them, if anything?
We found that when they were here as a single male, they had a huge sense of community. They did things together. You know, there was, they worked, they really felt value in their work, they said. They really loved who they worked for. They loved how the company, you know, gave them the freedom, the flexibility, and trusted them to give input. I don't know how, and I don't even know the sweet juice for this, to be honest, is how do we, when they, you know, they come back and they're newly married and they've relocated their wife here, how to embed that in the community? I don't know the answer to that. I don't know if it was just that population. I don't know if it was just the wrong timing. Again, as I mentioned before, one of my employees, she relocated her family here in December from India, and it was real cold. And her son just could do nothing but lay in the snow. And she's like, no, you're going to get hypothermia. Like, you can't be outside all the time. You've got to come in the house. So, you know, everyone's been really upfront with us and really honest with us, which I really appreciate, because as a, I mean, I've worked for very, very large organizations, global organizations in my career, and you don't necessarily get that level of connectivity with them. So they've been very honest, and some have even gone so far as saying, I just can't find a female social life in this rural setting. So I need to go to a larger setting to find that. So they do, they're part of the Kinsmen's in our local communities. They are a part of the churches in our local communities as well. Mm-hmm. You know, we put on, some of our managers even go above and beyond and have like every Wednesday night, it's a dodgeball tournament or it's a pickleball tournament or something like that, like some sports things that now we're going to sponsor. But it's when they layer that, you know, their new life.
Yeah,
and we respect that. We absolutely respect it.
It's hard to do that too. But you're, I also like what you said, like in terms of volunteerism, I used to work overseas, and one of my projects I was in charge of is, it was actually the first generation of Ukrainian children that would be born not in communism. And it was foreign when I got hired to do it, because they're like, okay, you're going to educate these young people on volunteerism and small business ownership, which came so natural to us as being Canadian. Yeah. And I was like, wow, you know, that's something I never thought of, was that some countries just don't have that volunteerism backbone and small business ownership. So volunteerism and immersing yourself in the community is a great way to feel valued and wanted. So yeah, you know, but opportunity is what you make it. So
it is. And we find it really easy in the spring, summer, fall. People love it.
Yeah.
But we all know winters are really tough, especially for immigrants. It's very tough. You know, it takes us decades to grow the skin that we have to, you know, withstand the minus 40 with the, you know, minus an extra 10 to 15% wind chill. So, and then it, you know, as we all know in rural Manitoba, rural Saskatchewan, rural communities, you've become very isolated then, right? And many of these people that come to us are community-based, right? Mm-hmm. So there is a lot that the employer can do, but then you also want to empower your employees to create their own sense of community as well, so that they have that there. But yeah, we don't have a problem ever, you know, celebrating things. There's basketball courts that are going up here in my local community, you know, those types of things, you know, really showcasing what sports they like to play and what they like to do.
Well, yeah. You know, I also say this too, though, is that in immigration, the employer brings the worker, you know, the worker to the community, but the community also has to pick up some slack too.
Yep.
And immerse that that newcomer, because it has to be a symbiotic relationship for sure between the employee and the employer, but as well as the community's benefiting from it. So I don't think the employer, they've already done the heavy lifting by hiring them, getting them here. So the rural community has to really step up and show some supports as well. That's my thought and what I usually say to people.
Yeah.
And it can be really hard too. You know, you think if you come over as a spouse, maybe you don't speak the language yet, you don't have a job, you don't have a license, you know, how do you get that, right? And how do the rural communities reach the people that are feeling that isolation? You know, most of us, like I said, we have the license and yeah, you just bundle up and go out, but and volunteer. But if you don't have that from your own culture. How do we get that? And yeah, I mean, that's not a new challenge, unfortunately, right? It's how do we get, actually, but speaking of that, do you have any spouses that work as well? Like, do you have a lot of partners that come over and they end up working for you too?
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah, we do. We absolutely have some that are kind of the duo, right? One came and then the next came. We have lots that have some entire families that are with us. One of the things that, you know, we're trying really hard and a focus for us going into next calendar year is in 2026 is, you know, we are open-minded and we understand that we are a very large employer in the area that we're in. We know that there's massive other employers, right? Whether it be oil and gas or potash around us, respectfully. Mm-hmm. And so for our niche, we actually want to really partner with other small organizations to really look outside their box because we are doing it, but we also can't hire every duo. We also really want to showcase that, oh, you know what? The town of Grenfell. Absolutely. This person, you should take a look at this person. Yes, this is their background. This is the bridge, but it'll pay off. So they're just trying to help and promote. That's really the focus of next year is going into some of our other organizations that are around us, even a little bit further, actually, to really support them and them making the transition and seeing what the payoff for that would be as well.
Mm-hmm. And I think it is. I mean, because if you can have both people happy, then that helps, you know.
Absolutely, it does. And the amount of daycares and schools capacity, hospital capacities. I mean, the list is endless of, you know, who we partner with on and communicate with on a regular basis. You know, the local hospitals, we absolutely do. The local doctors, we absolutely do. The daycare centers. I mean, yeah, it's a lot to make sure that everybody is still able to, you know, sustain. Because 300 at the factory is like 700, 800, 1,000 when it's all said and done in that local area. And that's a lot because those populations of those towns are not very big.
Mm-hmm. And are you finding, as Vatter said, continuing to grow? Yeah.
Yeah, it is definitely. I mean, agriculture, we know what happened with agriculture after and during COVID, right? It was just this, what? You know, farmers just, you know, grain prices, canola prices, just record highs.
Yeah, we're both farmers. Lindsay was a farmer. I'm a farmer as well. So yeah, we get it.
We're doing record lows right now.
We sure are. So we can talk about that little scoop there. Yeah. But I mean, honestly, there was a lot, you know, during the COVID. I mean, I think that Vatterstad handled it very, very well. I know that lots of employers struggled. I mean, I'll be honest, when I blew the horn in March of 2020, I was like, oh, well, I'll be gone for 2 weeks and then we'll all be back. And then we all learned really quickly that we weren't all going to be back right away. So that was interesting part of my career. But I do think that we've done it, you know, we continue to do it really well. So when we talk about expansions, we really do see what is the limits of what we can do out in that land bank facility. Because at the end of the day, it is in a farmer's field. That's what it is. So you can only have so much Wi-Fi out there. You can only have so many, you know, the well can only be so big. This local communities can only hold so much. So, I mean, as we talk about further and growing and diversifying where we are and where our skills are, does it make sense to still have our major parts distribution in a farmer's field? Should we maybe localize that into something that's a bit more regional and easier for logistics? So, you know, as you take a look at growth, because we just, you know, big growth in the United States, big growth in some of our other acquisitions globally as a company, and then investments in our home Vatterstad company as well in Sweden. So Canada definitely is on the earmark of continuing to grow, diversifying the portfolio. I mean, there's careers that exist today that did not exist 6 years ago when I was there.
Yes.
They did not. And so.
And I think that's just a great example too of, you know, as a young person, here's a great opportunity, a growing company. You know, you might start out in the, you know, the Saskatchewan site, but you never know where you could go, right? Because you're not just located in Saskatchewan. You're located, like you said, internationally. So there's, you never know what opportunities. It's a great, huge.
Potential. It is really great. It is. I mean, there's a gentleman in the United States, just an incredibly a wonderful manufacturing engineer, absolute world-class. And yet it's really hard to understand him because he's not native Canadian or not native American. So he does have a very thick accent. So if you've got a very thick accent on here, trying to communicate with the Swedes, which also have a language barrier, we're really tapping into Copilot and that translation app that's coming out. So There is that, but there's an incredible amount of opportunity to just learn from each other. And they're trying really hard. You know, Canada seems to be that neutral partner in all of it, right? We seem to be a melting pot, and that there's other organizations. I mean, we've even gone so far as trying our hand at a global mobility program. We're going to take a pause and redo a few things, and then we're going to launch it again. So that is a real attraction piece for professionals, yeah, as an example. Yeah. But we've got to get it right. And mm-hmm. right now, the political climate that's going on out there, yes, is making it a little hard on us. So we're just going to take a breather and start again. So
Kathy, if somebody was interested and they were more interested in applying to positions within rural and northern Canada, but specifically, obviously, in rural Saskatchewan, how do they? Because I was on your website, right? And mm-hmm. so, how do I make that known that I kind of want to be in the Canadian realm and more specifically in Saskatchewan, because you guys are international?
Yeah, we are. I mean, we purchased the Workday platform a few years ago globally so that we could have some more transparency with all of our roles and really sharing best practices. So you can continue to drill down into our platform to locate Canada. And then again, I mean, it's still our people, you know, there's no robots in front of ours. I mean, we are 300 in Canada, so it's mm-hmm. the ladies that are drilling down with their managers and taking a look at it. And because it is still, it's a small company and there are no robots that are injecting themselves into it, talking about the applicability of what you've done and then taking that extra step and applying it to how it could be happening here helps with the translation, because not everybody's great. And every resume has a little different, you know, Swinglish to it is what we call, or different, you know, take on a word. When I was doing transitioning military people into the Canadian economy and Canadian job market several years ago, I mean, even just the military was, I mean, I remember hearing, oh yes, if you were a gun control person in the, you know, Canadian military, you're an HR manager. And I was like, what? How does that apply? So, you know, having that translation yourself of what you can bring to the table and not be so specific in what you used to do. And again, I use the lady that works for me. She was a team lead in a major auditing organization for decades before mm-hmm. coming. Those skills can absolutely be applied to pay time and attendance.
So, Kathy, before I forget, I'm going to ask you something, because every time we release a podcast, I get numerous LinkedIn invites. Do you do labor market impact assessments, or do you just look for postgraduate work holders? How do you?
No, we do LMIAs. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. The ladies at, you know, when we started, we were very focused though, when we started down this journey. And as we got more and more educated and more comfortable as the process goes, we do. We work very hand in hand with those labor market assessments. We work really closely as well, because sometimes, you know, they only do the impact assessment at a very high level and not really what is granular, what to rural Saskatchewan is. You know, we aren't, you know, a lot of organizations in rural Saskatchewan sometimes can't, or Manitoba can't pay that high level of what you need to reach to that benchmark.
Oh yeah, the medium wage. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. so we really advocate for, there's a scale to be looked at, right? They only take a look, and I'll just use an example, is they only look at a journeyman welder. There are four other levels of welding that many of these smaller organizations need, mm-hmm. but they're not going to be able to do this. So we work really hard with them to showcase kind of where we are, how to approach it, and not from a lowballing perspective at all, not at all. But I mean, it's just like going in and saying, I need an engineer, new graduate, but they're like, you have to pay them a master engineer, right? I mean, it's a very big difference, and the scale of work is very different. So, and we want to support a lot of local communities, not just our own, and not our own company as well, right? There's other organizations that have tapped us on the shoulder saying, how did you get to that point? How did you get them to recognize that there's different levels within that one discipline? And then we kind of really help the rest of the small companies around us as well. So, because there's lots of farmers that they have townships, they are their own company, and mm-hmm. they don't need a journeyman welder. They don't need a journeyman mechanic. They just need something different. So.
Exactly. So, yeah. So the best way then to reach out is to go to your site, mm-hmm. apply, you know, maybe what are your thoughts on people connecting with you or your on LinkedIn? Is that a thing? Do you, are you big?
I get a lot of that
connection. Do you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think I'm well over the 1,000. And I remember with LinkedIn when it was first coming to Canada, like 15 years ago, it's really evolved. It's really grown. You can see my team as well on my page, on my LinkedIn page, cause they're all there. So they reach out as well. So we share a lot of, I mean, for me, I really want my team. I mean, they work so closely with the company. They work so closely. They know everybody's name, which I absolutely adore and love. And so I really want us to continue partnering with organizations like yourself to get the more word out there, more knowledge, more. Let's just talk about it. Let's just talk about, you know what, we're not all doing everything really great. We absolutely have opportunities to do better, and we need to rely on each other to help each other do better. And it's not those big five, right? There are so many other small employers within rural communities that absolutely probably need more support and more conversation rather than the big ones.
And you're going to get ahead sooner, in my opinion, too, with the smaller companies, you know, a lot sooner, better opportunities than you would with those big companies.
Exactly.
Well, I think we're coming to the end here, Lindsay, unless you had, I have two more questions. Do any of your positions, Kathy, require French? I know there's a large push nowadays more in Canada, more French. I'm just curious, are there any jobs that need French at your company?
So we actually have a subsidiary, I shouldn't say a subsidiary, our Eastern Canadian parts and sales and service organization is out in Quebec and Ontario. So we actually do stretch quite a ways in that aspect. So there is, depending on where it is, there is an absolute need for that. Okay. Some of them actually even have to be posted in French. So we do absolutely have out there more so than in the rural where our factory is. And then again, in Western Canada, in the Alberta, Northern Alberta, things like that. We have a bit. I know that when we're expanding more into Manitoba, as we both will know, that there's a strong French influence in Manitoba.
Yeah.
So that is something that we're looking at diversifying a little bit closer. But the absolute, you know, the ones that we have for Ontario and Quebec, absolutely. Each of them speaks fluent.
Yeah, that totally makes sense.
And there's the great pathway for French mobility as well. So that makes immigration easier on the company and the individual themselves. So
exactly.
You don't have to go through the provincial nominee program, which is a blessing.
Yeah, it would be.
And we always like to ask, because we always like to promote rural areas. Do you have a favorite rural restaurant or a rural place that you'd like to visit in Canada?
I'm going to be probably really biased because I live in Mooseman, Saskatchewan. So, I lived in Calgary with the oil boom in the 90s. I mean, like most of Saskatchewan, Manitoba left. but we all came back. So that's the big story there. I love just the small town ones, right? I mean, I love those little ones like Cork and Bone in Mooseman. He was born and raised in Mooseman. He left and went out to Banff, Kananaskis, ran major like Fairmont hotels and stuff. And he came back to raise his son with a small little boutique. And, you know, those are some really great dinners. He does lovely wine pairings and things like that. So that's like a nice little company dinner. Like we love to entertain our Swedes and internationals that come. And then again, there's like wonderful little smoke shops, right? Like Crate House, where you can get like, they can come and do like a luncheon for everyone, smoked briskets, pulled pork, all that kind of stuff. Get it sent out to the factory and to our colleagues and things like that. So
are these both in Mooseman? So
those ones are in Mooseman, yes.
So I'm writing these down because I pass through Mooseman all the time. So Cork and Bone and Crate House?
Crate House, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I'm going to put these
Crate House is a really great, like it's a smoke shop. So, you know, smoked brisket, smoked meats.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's really good.
I think we have to do an in-person meeting in Mooseman.
Yeah, I think we should. I think we should.
Follow up in Mooseman.
Yeah, Mooseman is, you know, it is the largest center to Langbank. So, you know, a lot of our professionals do prefer to stay in Mooseman, right? It's 4,500 or 4,000 people. I'm sure Casey probably mentioned the population of it. So,
yeah.
But I mean, there is like Kipling and there is brilliant little places like Filipino places now to eat that are popping up in that Kipling area as well. So love that, right? I mean, Regina's got some really great little nuggets that we love to pull from as well. So the food scene has really changed a lot over the last, I'm going to say 10 years, and really diversifying what people are doing. We're really lucky because at the site, we actually have a full-blown cafeteria that has breakfast subsidized and lunch subsidized for our employees. Wow. So that, and that's also a really big, well, you can't go anywhere.
No, that's huge though. That's really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They're, awesome. It's quite nice that way. So, but yeah, I mean, like I said, there's some really, it's the right space. Mm-hmm. You got to have the right space. So it's not Absolutely. Fit for everybody, but that's okay. I mean, we're here to, the next piece is the retention. How do we do yep. better at that?
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Kathy, for coming on today. You've given yes, us a lot you. Of great information. Listeners definitely will have all the information in the show notes that you can check out. Connect with Kathy on LinkedIn. And if you have any questions, please reach out. And yes, thanks, everyone.
Yeah, until next time, live rural, live well.
If you feel this could assist other people like yourself, please like and share our podcast. As well, we will leave links below to the topics we spoke about today. Thank you for listening and join us next time to learn about another great company and community that is a great place to work and settle.